Well, everybody has a choice. Do you play golf to hit great golf shots and you don't care what you score? Or do you play golf to shoot a low score, which means you might not hit any great or crazy cool golf shots? Let's go!
And welcome back. Welcome aboard another Par Train. I'm Ev. This is Serm.
What's up, Ev? It's good to be back. Great episode. What do you think?
I was just telling you off air. We've never talked that long after an interview. We just were debating concepts, talking about what we loved.
Lots of truths here.
I mean, there is so much in this episode. All of us, Virgil, our guest as well, is a great coach and player in his own right. We looked up and it was an hour. One of the most fun we've had on the show in a while. But first, in case you guys are new, we help frustrated golfers enjoy the ride again, because if you can learn to smile through bad golf, you can smile through anything. We unpack the mental game with anyone from a tour pro to a coach and golfers like you and me. Today, you guys are going to be blown away. But before we get to that, quick word from our friends at Roback Activewear. I just went to Sand Valley, did some consulting stuff there. And so that's, quote, a business setting, right? Guess what I wore?
That is a business setting.
Head to toe, Roback. Roback golf pants, Roback.
I mean, Andy had to do some layers, a little snow up in the upper Midwest.
Oh, there was snow as well.
I know you're not usually good at bringing the warm clothes. No. So how much Roback hoodies, Q-zips, vests?
Oh, you got to layer up five of them.
Yeah.
But
so you did it.
Oh, yeah. But because it's stretchy, soft, you can do it. But I think the key is I was in a business setting and I wore all Roback gear head to toe. It's the best. So go to roback.com, enter the code train, get 15% off. If you forget the code, go to our Instagram bio at the Par Train, tap the link that says Roback, and it'll auto apply in your cart. So thanks to Roback as always for making this show possible. We love getting your messages about the Azalea prints and all of the new styles that you're buying. It means the world, not only to support Roback, but also show that the passengers are on that Roback train just as much as the Par Train. So, all right, a little context on Virgil. We are introduced by a mutual contact, and he is the first PGA professional to do a TED Talk. He did a TED Talk on peak human performance from elite athletes and military. He's coached 6 national champions in the NCAAs. He's gotten over 200 players to play college golf, and he coached Brant Snedeker for 7 years, as well as through Brant's Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour. So, and he's won 14 times as a pro. Virgil has.
Yeah.
So really great breadth of experience of being a great coach, but also walking the walk. And Serm, we were just talking off air, like, if someone wants to get better, truly get better. Like, and really ask yourself, like, do you actually want to get better or do you just want to have fun with your buddies, right? Hopefully it's both. But there was a lot of truth bombs, I think, in this episode.
Yeah.
Of calling out one or the other, whether it's practice routines, whether it's what Brant Snedeker and Phil Mickelson do that we don't, whether it's mindset of how they think versus how we think. There was a ton here that I think this is going to be one of those episodes that you want to listen to again and again with a notepad, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of ours can be like that, but boy, it was so fun to talk to Virgil because just so much energy. I mean, just lives and breathes this idea of how we get better. Right. So we do a lot of tour talk, which is super cool because he's coached tour players. Some really good stories, funny stories. Well, like, whoa, look ins, but at the same time, we're applying them right back to amateur golfers. All of us. And he does a great job. And then he brings the data and the math along with a lot of what he's encouraging us to do, whether it's, like I say, whether he talks about the red dot on the glove, guys, you're going to really like this part of the episode.
Yeah.
Talks about, being hypnotized, hypnotherapist.
Yeah.
And then obviously I really geeked out on some of the practice stuff we talked about in the end. It's like, guys, how do we make the most of our range sessions? This is a topic you and I have been talking about. And guys, I think we really actually have the concept down thanks to Virgil.
I've been doing it wrong. Right.
Yeah, and just, but again, it gets back to our theme.
Yeah.
You've got to make a decision. Like, do you want to do the fun stuff? Do you want to hit bombs on the range? Do you just want to hit bombs on the course? or you want to dig in. It's got to hurt a little bit, not the sexy stuff, but all in the effort to just shoot lower scores. So that dichotomy is this episode, and we kind of cut through it. So absolutely fantastic. You know, we're going to have Virgil back and, you know, for round two and probably round three. So really good stuff.
Yeah, that was really good. Well, if you guys like the episode, hop aboard the Par Train by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, and subscribe on YouTube at the Par Train. These episodes will be up every Monday in video form if you want to see our beautiful faces and Virgil's, as well as every other video we're doing. So lessons, on-course stuff, different takes and things to help you enjoy the ride and get better this year, like we're always doing on the podcast. So as always, if you're struggling and you feel like you're really working hard, but you're not seeing the results, this episode's going to be great for you. And no matter what, sir, what do they got to do?
Keep learning and enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride, guys. Take care. Virgil Herring, it is our pleasure. Welcome aboard the Par Train, my man. We're pumped to have you.
Well, I'm honored to be here, so thank you very much for having me.
Hey, Virgil.
We have, good to see you. We have so much to get into, Virgil, but first we wanted to ask you, from a nerves management standpoint, we'll get to it, but you've won 14 times as a professional. Keep me honest on that number, but I'm pretty sure that's what you told me.
Yep.
And how do the nerves, you've also coached a lot of winners over the years. How do the nerves compare? Coaching, seeing someone you coach come down the stretch, you coming down the stretch to win as a professional, or doing your first TED Talk?
Ooh. I will tell you that there's nothing that I have done that was more unnerving than when I stepped on the TEDx stage. Mm. You can talk the game all you want, but when you step up on that platform, knowing how big that platform is, it's just like you can talk is cheap in that department. When it comes to golf in the player department, it took me a long time to win a multiple day event. I've won plenty of what I call one day sprints where you don't really know where you stand. You just go out there and try to shoot the lowest score you can. And there's no real pressure other than, you know, you're competing, but there's nothing like sleeping on a lead and your mind starts racing because as the better you get, the more your expectations rise because you know what you're capable of. That's why you're practicing. You have these dreams and aspirations, and those dreams and aspirations have weight. History has weight. So when you get in that moment with the lead, that's why it's hard to play with the lead because you've worked your entire life for this moment and you don't know how many more you're going to get. And you let all of the things in the past and in the future interfere with the actual important part, which is the present. And so I spend a lot of time teaching people to what I call immersive presence, because the only way to access higher levels of performance, zone state, and then even deeper than that, flow state, is to be immersively present. And it is, most people struggle on the anxiety side of it, which is forward thinking. They get ahead of themselves. There aren't many great players that are impacted by the past. But great players, they hit a bad shot. They kind of know that golf is eminently, you're going to hit some bad ones. They don't get wound up with the bad. They get caught up in what's going to happen. They start trying to control things that they actually have no control over. That then puts their mental, that puts the prefrontal cortex involved. They want to try to control things, control the pain of emotional and mental failure. And then all that does is slow down the transmission from the cerebellum to the muscles. And then you interfere with yourself. And it took me a long time as a player to control that. Now, I've only won two multiple day events in my life, and I won 12 single day sprints, but those were the two most satisfying because I was able to corral all of the anxieties that I've had about all the years. Now I'm 50. I've been working at this for 36 years to be as great as I can be. And every time I find myself in the chance to win, I get nervous. I get excited. I start wondering. I start trying to control things that I actually have no control over. And I finally figured out how to control that. And it's always like I've done a lot of hypnotherapy, similar to what Tiger did in his youth. I have things on my glove that are like my anchors to bring me back to the present. And learning how to hack the brain is something that I put into my players. Now, I don't do the hypnotherapy. I have somebody that does it with me, but it has played a huge role in Tiger's success, Muhammad Ali's success, among many others. And it's a very powerful tool.
Ev, isn't this a great way to start an interview as Virgil dives in to, you know, somebody who's won a lot of events and every day, every week, you're still working on how to be less nervous because we all get nervous and how to perform at the highest level. And I think what you're saying, Virgil, is so good for our listeners, but you're an elite player, but we know even that next level, right? The PGA Tour guys, and they're working on the same stuff because it just doesn't go away. So I think this is a great start for us.
I think of the two right now, I think there are three or four poignant stories that we're seeing align. The pressure of history, Greg Norman and the Masters. I mean, it got to the point where it weighed so much, he couldn't play it.
Yeah.
Rory McIlroy and the Masters. It is now obvious that it is like a 1,000-pound backpack. He can't walk 72 holes without the duck hook on 10 and the duck hook on 13 from 2012 swirling in his head like a ghost. Jordan Spieth in the PGA Championship and Phil Mickelson with the U.S. Open. Grand Slam history. All three of those guys are one win away from being in probably the most elite category. And think about how heavy the U.S. Open is for Phil and how heavy is the Masters is for Rory, because they've both come so close so many times. And now, well, Phil for sure is like, am I ever going to get another chance? Rory probably feels like he's got four pretty good chances. And then after that, probably luck.
Sam Snead in the U.S. Open too.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
The guy won 83 times, right? No, it's and it's hard. So.
But it's history. It's what you've spent your entire life chasing. And now you get it and it right in front. And it's so hard to let go of the possibility of achieving like this, one of your greatest dreams of your life.
Yeah.
And man, it takes a level of skill. You have to prepare for it. And some people don't like to prepare for it because they don't want to think that they're arrogant or that they're getting ahead of themselves. But what it takes to be an elite anything is visualization and rehearsal in your mind, because what goes on inside your mind in a vivid rehearsal and what goes on in the real thing is proven to be exactly the same. But most people don't want to do that work. They want to work on their golf swing or they want to hit putts, but they don't want to work on something that they could do laying in bed at night for 30 minutes before they go to sleep. It would probably help you sleep better too. But at the end of the day, learning how to control your mind happens before you get on the first tee. And most people are trying to learn how to do it in action, and that's too late.
Yeah, we literally just talked to Keith Bennett last week, and it kind of reminds me of what Keith said, Matt, where he said, you know, practice is like studying. Playing golf is like the exam. And so why do we keep not practicing soft seven irons and expect full yardages, right? And why do we, to your point, Virgil, you can't just beat a bunch of balls trying to work on positions, and then you get on the golf course and you've got meaning, you've got pressure, you've got past, you've got present, you've got future. And that's an entirely different feeling than hitting 25 eight irons, you know, to a flag that you're not even looking at. It's entirely different. So before we dig into more of this, Virgil, I want to ask you, what was on your glove?
So I have a little black dot. And when I'm working with the hypnotherapist, name is Steve Rain. He's one of the best in the world. And this is all based around Tiger's stuff in his book that John Andrezani wrote, the Mind of Tiger Woods. And also Louis Oosthuizen, when he won the 2010 Open Championship, he had a red dot on his glove for the exact same reason, is that the hypnotherapist trains that spot to be the anchor to your presence. Tiger used the Velcro on his glove. So it's not, like, they're always trying to, like, what is something that you do every shot? The Velcro on the glove. That sound is an auditory anchor. Boom, you're in the office. You know, Louis Tazen took his grip up here. He saw it. Boom, he's in the office. Then he's looking at it while he's set up to the ball. All of those things are really set up to bring you into presence, because that's what you're looking at. And you're not thinking about what might happen or what just happened. You're here now. And that's like little things. Like, there's so many little things that the best players do that they don't want you to know that they're doing, because They don't want to give away their secret because it's their secret for them to play great.
What's the mechanic there specifically? So obviously, like, I understand, like, Matt used to write stuff on his glove. We've created gloves that have Enjoy the Ride on the front to kind of serve as that reminder and bring you back. That red or black dot, is there a conscious thought around every time you see it? Or am I looking at the dot and that just means, like, it's game time? Like, try to help me understand what actually happens by looking at the dot.
So you go through like a 30-minute exercise with Steve,
yep.
And he's telling you what that means. Like, every time you hear this Velcro rip or every time you see that red dot, it's a reminder that you're in the office. It's time to be present. And and basically what it is that you're yeah. telling him what you want it to be. Like, you have to go in with the intent. What do I want? Steve, I get nervous when I'm getting close to achieving one of my dreams as a player. I need something to bring me back to presence. He's like, is there something that you do every shot? Do you always mess with your hat? Do you always mess with your glove? I'm like, I'm a glove guy. I'm always messing with my glove. And he's like, okay, let's put something on your glove. And let's make a dot and make it, you know, whatever. And now every time you have to be intentional. This is the sign that you're in the office.
Yeah. I mean, it's really good. I've pictured that, right? Like, you're walking up to the ball, right? You're kind of with it, kind of not putting on the glove. You take your golf glove off in between shots. You're putting it on. You see that red dot, and it's like a, okay, like you said, in the office, it's a shift that says that there's just, all right, that's all here, and you're coming here.
It's I'm in the batter's box.
Powerful.
It's time. Very powerful. It's time to go.
Yeah.
And I think another thing that's really subtle that I don't think many people think about, and I want you to, this is going to take a second to explain. Most people don't understand how to go in and out of high-end focus in around the golf. Okay. You're supposed to be paying attention for about a minute, hopefully like 70 times a day, right? For the tour level guys, 68 times a day, right?
Yeah.
But what most people think is they have to stay focused from the first tee to the 18th green. And think about, because I know how much you guys love golf. Think about how many times you get off to a good start, and by hole six, you are so gassed mentally because you've taken no time off from the tee box on number one to the walking from the sixth green to the seventh tee. You've been on, but you didn't need to be on for 97% of that time. Fred Couples was the best. Like, he was like, there's another thing called externalization, which is why it's so important to walk with your head up. Because if your eyes are looking into the horizon, it makes you small, it makes the world big, and it brings you into center.
I think,
right?
Rory was just talking about that on the I Can Fly podcast.
Yeah,
right? Like, just so working on not being this, being this, this whole past year. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Body language is critical, and it's a hack, right? Chest out, eyes up, externalizes you, makes the world bigger and you smaller, which is what we really need to stay present. But when you're walking with the head down, you're only seeing like 1 foot by 6 feet of space, and you're really big in that place. And you have to learn how to, like, all of those things have really tiny factors, but they build up over time. So you get to the 17th hole, you're so overwhelmed and you're gassed because you haven't spent any time out of the office. And you only need to be on when the bag hits the ground or the caddy puts the bag down by the ball. That's when it's time to get in the office. And most people are focusing literally every step of the way, like almost like Winnie the Pooh. Think. They're just thinking the whole way and they're gassed. They can't hold on to it for 5 hours.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Virgil. You've coached 6 national champions.
Yep.
Over 200 players that made it to college golf. Brant Snedeker when he won the Rookie of the Year. And you won 14 times as a pro. When you think about observing these different levels of success, right? The peak of a college athlete, getting to college, so getting recruited, making it on the team, getting that D1 scholarship. That's for most of us, that's like the pinnacle, right? Yeah. And then seeing a tour pro win at the highest level as a rookie and then yourself winning, like, what taught you the most about, what did you learn the most from to help you figure out how to play good golf? What taught you the most there?
I think Brant taught me the most.
How so?
I know that I helped Brant with his golf swing a ton. I get that. And so is Todd Anderson, and so is Butch Harmon. So he's worked with a lot of guys, right? But I was the guy from like 18 to 26 in the very formative building years. And like, I have video on a drive. I was looking at it recently because he's been struggling, and I just watched because I care. It hasn't changed at all. I mean, it's like identical. So it's that's habit. That's muscle memory. So as much as people try to change, it's really hard. You're just trying to refine. There are a couple of things I'll never ever forget. His attitude is what made him the greatest player I've ever coached. And this is one of the greatest stories I can tell because it really made an impact on me. We were playing in a 2-day event. He was at Vanderbilt, number one player in college golf. We're winning the first day by 6. And he goes out, he's 21. He goes out the night with all his buddies from college. He doesn't show up to hit golf balls in a driving range. And he literally shows up on the first tee with 30 seconds to go before we get a 2-stroke penalty. I'm so angry at him because I put up the money for the event. We're winning. It's a big deal. So I hook my tee shot on the first hole into the trees, and I'm seeing red. And he hits his. He's right-handed. I'm left-handed. He blocks his into the trees. We're like 7 yards apart. So we pull the cart up, and I can't even talk to him. I'm so mad. And he's like, "What are you going to do, coach?" I said, "I don't know. I think I'm just going to hit it up over the trees and play it out to the right. I don't know, Snez. I'm so mad right now. I can't even see straight. What are you going to do?" He goes, "Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to chip 7-iron right out here in front of the green, and then I'm going to chip it in, and we're going to crush these fools before we even get started." He literally chips it out underneath the trees out in front of the green, chips it in, winks at me, and we win by 15. And I will – like, so he says that, and I look to him like, "Is that what you're really thinking?" And he looks at me as like a stone-faced killer. He's like, "Yeah, what are you thinking?" And I'm like, "I ain't thinking like that." And that's the difference. Brant was just like, no matter what has to happen for us to win, I'm doing it. And yeah, no matter how bad he's hitting it, he demonstrated it time after time. No matter how bad he was hitting it, if he had to hit a shot to win and he had hit a good shot all day, his mindset was kind of like a great basketball shooter. "I haven't hit a good one all day. I'm so overdue. I'm going on a run, and it's going to start right now." Mm-hmm. And that mindset, he triggered me into the largest group of my wins, because when you hang around somebody that thinks like an elite champion, it's infectious. And I can't imagine what it would be like if you hung around Tiger, Phil, you know, Rory, when they're on their game, how they just pull you up because of how they think. And it's really infectious, and it's trainable, but you just have to learn to believe in yourself at that level. And some people don't have the courage to do that.
All right, the train's gonna make a quick stop, then we'll get it moving quickly. But first of all, I'm so excited, guys. It is almost Masters week. As I'm recording this, it's gonna be next week. And I want to bring you a little Masters history, okay? I just learned about this. I didn't really know about the story. I think I heard about it years ago, but I forgot about it. Did you know that Augusta National has one palm tree? It's on the fourth hole. They actually call it the Lone Palm. So if you make your way to the western border of Augusta National, you'll find the lengthy par 3 fourth. And if you make your way down the right side of the hole, you'll pass a stand of bamboo. Yes, it has bamboo too. But if you look up, you'll see a palm tree. Now, before Augusta National was a golf course, it was a nursery. So Fruitland Nurseries was owned by the Berkmans family. And when the course opened, Lewis Berkman became a member. He helped club founders Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts name the holes, one plant or tree per hole. So if number 4 was actually originally called palm, because there was a bunch of palm trees down the right side, likely planted around the time the course opened. But there was a winter storm and most of them died off. And so the hole got renamed Flowering Crab Apple, but one palm tree survived, the Lone Palm.
on hole four. Pretty crazy. You would never think there's a palm tree on Augusta National. Well, my friends at Olokai just did a lone palm collection, shoe collection. So there's multiple styles, green and yellow, very tasteful, very cool shoes. They're incredible. I've got both of them. There's a women's style and there's two men's style. One slip-on, one traditional golf shoe. And you just go to olokai.com. You'll see it right on the homepage. And before, remember, Olokai is high quality. I could never get a discount out of them. But now I got you guys expedited shipping for free. So go to olokai.com, get yourself one of the lone palms, and enter the code TRAIN, and you'll get free expedited shipping to get these babies, hopefully, Masters Week. We'll see. So thank you guys as always. Let's get back to the show.
Snedeker, watching him over the years, he's kind of a quick player. He's a fast player. He's kind of a handsy putter. It's the most beautiful stroke to watch. He just seems so instinctual when he's at his best. It seems to come out in his personality, Virgil. And like, that's great. It seems like he sees it. He does it. And we all can learn from that because, you know, when we're working on things in our swing, it's just paralysis by analysis. It's just talk about how you watch that with him. It's just that flow.
So this is awesome stuff, right? So Brandt used to take a long time, especially when he was going through his swing changes. He took it way inside and closed, up across the line, stuck underneath, flip hook. So when he was going through his swing changes, he'd stand over the ball, like, take away. And I'm like, here, dude. You know, it's kind of like Pia Nielsen stuff and Lynn Marriott. Think box, play box.
Yeah.
So he actually takes a very long time in the think box. But the science behind feeling real, Deborah Graham wrote in her book, The 8 Traits of a Champion Golfer, you can hold a feel at 90% effectiveness up to 8 seconds. So I say as soon as Brandt crossed into the play box, he had to hit it within 8 seconds. And he averages about 4.2 to 4.7. So what you don't see, unless he's winning, you only see him as he walks in. You don't see all the gyrations, and he's actually has a little bit of nervous energy. He takes care of all that in the think box. And as soon as he commits, man, it's out of there. And that is what we worked on to get him out of his head, is like get it all out of your system. And then as soon as you've committed, cross the line and hit it. And that's where that, you know, that little tap behind the ball, tap, tap, boom, and it's gone. He's already committed, and he's trying to hit it as fast as he can comfortably do it, because the closer you get to 0 seconds, the more the feel is real.
That's a great description.
I love that story. And one thing I want to dig into here is, you know, an average player, let's just say a 10 handicap, right? Mm-hmm. Might hear that story and think, man, that's awesome, but I could never have that. Right. They might think, of course, Brandt or Tiger can have that level of belief when they've got that level of skill and enough previous outcomes to inform that. But I also know there's a ton of power in acting as if, right? What would I feel? What would I think? What would I do if I was like that? And then see what happens. How do you help fill that gap? Because, you know, you've talked about how to help people go from, I hope I can do it, to I believe I can do it, to I know I can do it. And I want to talk about helping people kind of close the gap of belief when they don't feel like their physical game warrants it.
So this is, I'm going to unpack this slowly, okay?
Yeah.
When I was thinking that I could play, I was being coached by Jim McClain. And I was an angry golfer, because when I was a pitcher, I was a good pitcher until I tore my rotator cuff. The angrier I pitched, the better I played. So I then immediately attached to, well, obviously I'm not angry enough playing golf. So the angrier I got, the worse I played. So that just means I wasn't angry enough. So I just turned the volume up. And that was the 19, 20-year-old version of me. So he asked me why I got so mad. And I told him that story. And he's like, okay, I love it. You hold on to it too long. But let me help you with something. What's your handicap, Virgil? I said I'm a +4. who's your favorite golfer? And at that time, it was Greg Norman. So Greg Norman's a +9. So he's 5 shots better than you. How many fairways does Greg Norman hit? I don't know, 12? He goes, nope, 8. How many greens does he hit? I said, I don't know, 16? He goes, no, 13.8, so we'll give him 14. So he misses 6 fairways and 4 greens. That's 10 bad shots. And he's 5 shots better than you. So here's my rule. You can't get mad until you've hit your 16th bad shot, because up until then, you're performing at your talent level. So if you pull that back to a 10 handicap, and let's just say Scotty Scheffler's that visual, and he's a +10, that's 20 shots. Add 10. You're not even supposed to get upset until bad shot 30. Hmm. So now hold that in. Like, okay, now why don't I just believe that I can do it until I get to bad shot 31? Because up until bad shot 31, I'm playing the way I'm supposed to play. But the expectations of hope interfere with what you know. And there is the constant dilemma that we're all facing, is that we don't move out of hope, belief, to know very well. We think we know when we only hope. And sometimes the people that really know hope under pressure. Right. And learning how to be in those places for real is the big difference.
Yeah. Virgil, I think the example you gave about Brandt, he's in the trees. And what does he say to you? We're talking about one of the great players in the world. I'm going to punch it out short of the green so I can put myself in a good place to chip it in. Now he chipped it in. Now, if you're an amateur, and this is where I just don't think people can't make jumps in their game oftentimes, or even a good player who struggles on that day just can't accept being smart so that you can put yourself in a really, really confident position to then perform on the next shot. But it takes that grace and that humility to get there. You talked about Jason Day on the Mark podcast. His goal in 2015 and his record-setting year was to average 3 on par 3s. Par 3s are the hardest holes on the golf course. So if you're an amateur, why don't we just say my goal is to average a bogey on par 3s? Talk about this level of discipline and how to approach playing good golf.
Well, obviously, it goes into do you know actually how far you carry the golf ball? Can you predict what direction it's going to curve? As soon as you have that, you can destroy a golf course. But most people don't know how far they really carry it. That's a really important word, really carry it, instead of what they think they carry it. And they don't just accept the fact that they play a 15 yards, fade or slice, or a swinging draw that's 20 yards of curve, for that matter. If you know how to manage your dispersion, you just kind of chess match your way around. But the real dilemma is most people have it. Well, everybody has a choice. Do you play golf to hit great golf shots and you don't care what you score? Or do you play golf to shoot a low score, which means you might not hit many great or crazy cool golf shots? But what ends up happening is people want to hit the heroic golf shot that they're not really qualified to hit, but they also want to shoot a low score. Hmm. So they get conflicted with who they want to be at the moment, and they try to hit some kind of heroic slinging hook around the tree. And for what reason? It's not really worth it if you're trying to shoot a low score. If you're trying to shoot a low score, you have to, what's the percentage play? And then play the percentage play.
Ev, you and I were talking about this, coming off a good hole or a good hole, and then controlling your emotion on that next hole to realize this is a completely different set of circumstances, instead of trying to carry over the momentum and then make a rash decision.
Yeah. And Cermak has reminded me before. He goes, are you going out today? And this is a great point that I would bet very few of the average player actually has an intention of what they want out of this round. Am I going to test a new swing feel, right? I've been working on my swing, or am I testing to shoot a score? Am I trying to shoot a score, right? That's the same thing, Virgil, with your point about trying to hit great shots versus a great score. Obviously, everybody would answer both, but you're right. I think that whole idea of hope versus believe versus know. I think so many of us just hope to hit that shot we hit on hole two and reproduce, because that's the intoxicating thing. There, we've all hit a pure high draw four iron that is just the greatest feeling in the world, or a low piercing three wood, or whatever the shot is for you.
Yep.
But maybe that's a great reminder to everybody, is if we could remove ourselves from the intoxication of reproducing an amazing shot to trying to shoot a score, I bet our expectations would automatically change.
100%, but that requires presence.
Yeah. Because
you're drifting back into the past or flash forwarding into the future. And, you know, here's like a lot of things that the great players do that not many people know. Like on Jack Nicklaus's yardage book, on the top flap, he had the greatest shot he ever hit with every club in his bag. So when the caddy's like, all right, Jack, we're 163, 7-iron. The last thing he sees is the 7-iron he hit in the 1981 U.S. Open that hit the flagstick. That creates the visual as he sets in over the shot. The most powerful shot is not creating a golf shot. It's recreating it. And you have to, so when you have the intention right in front of your face, the last thing you see is the greatest 7-iron I've ever hit was the 7-iron at the U.S. Open in 1981 that hit the flagstick. What a great way to walk into a shot. But most people don't document their rounds. They talk about it, but they don't document it. So they don't have anything to remember as they step in. If there's one thing that I'm absolutely 100% positive of, the tour players do all the little things that take no work to build the groundwork and the base to be a great player, because they're doing things before they actually hit the shot to increase their self-image. And you cannot outperform your self-image. And your self-image, by definition, is all of your talents minus the interference is your self-image. So if you're walking around with a scratch game and enough interferences that make you a 10 handicap, no matter how good you think you are, your self-image is a 10 and you will be a 10. You can't outperform who you believe you are. And that is ultimately the challenge for coach and player. My job is to get you to believe in yourself more than you've ever believed without being false. And your job is to allow yourself to believe you can do it when you've never done it before. And there's the dance. If it took experience to win, nobody would have ever won. It's the people who see themselves win in their head before they do it to become the legends that we talk about so frequently. And people don't want to understand the back office stuff. They want to see what they saw on TV. But that what they saw on TV was the culmination of practice that was ultimately way more difficult than the shot at hand. And their practice made that shot under the greatest duress easy because they practice harder than they play.
You know, it just made me think of my last round of last year. It was a breakthrough moment, but it was kind of full circle for me because, you know, I hit a natural cut. I struggled to hit a draw. I have noses. I really struggled to do it. And it kind of beats me up because when I was playing, when I was younger in college, I could do it more often. So it was my last round of the year, Virgil. I'm even after the 10th hole, and we're playing this golf course in Chicago, Ravis Low Country Club. The 11th hole is a 190-yard par three with a back left hole location. Skinny green. Tough hole. Just one of the toughest holes on the course. And I just made birdie on 10 to go one under, I think. Typically, earlier in the year, I'd be like, I got the shot. I can hit this draw. I got the momentum. But it was one of those moments where I actually said to myself, I just got to the day, I said, oh, shit, this hole again. The shot for me, because I just struggle to draw it and try to pull off a heroic shot, is to just aim 40 feet right, take a little less club. And my goal is to try to have a good two putt from 40 feet, you know, and I did it. And it's possible to three putt that, but I get up there, all that momentum, feeling like I got this. This is my day. Try to hit that shot, and 8 out of 10, that thing's going hard left. Those are the moments though, where you've got like, man, I know I can hit this shot. It's my day. My swing's good. I can hit that draw. But it's like, sometimes you just check yourself. So that was a good moment for me, because earlier in the year when I was feeling momentum in rounds, I felt like I could really hit that shot because I've done it before. Mm. And then I would really, really see myself go south. So not to pat myself on the back, but I'm kind of patting myself on the back.
Yeah, for sure. You should be.
There's talk about that.
Two things to take out of that, right? Number one is, this is one of my ultimate rules, is that when you're in the zone, you're not thinking. But if you're not in the zone, you better be thinking.
Mm.
So when you birdied 10,
yeah,
you weren't in the zone. So you were thinking. So you played the shot you knew you could play, because not every hole is a birdie hole. And right. 11 at Ravenslow is definitely not a birdie
10 hole. 10 was a straightaway 380-yard par 4.
Yeah. I mean, I've played. I used to teach golf at Winnetka Golf Club.
Oh, so, my God. You know. Okay.
Yeah, cool. So, like, Ravenslow is – that's a hard hole. So, yeah. Like, every tour player is going to walk up to that tee ball and be like, I'm hitting it in the middle of this green, and I'm going to walk out of here with a 3. And if I make my birdie putt, great. But I'm like – I just want to get out of here with a 3 and go to the next hole.
Right.
So what you did in the past was that you thought you were in the zone all coming off a birdie, and you weren't. And deep down inside, your brain knew better, but you wanted to see if you could do it. That day, for whatever reason, you recognized you're playing good, but you're not in the zone, because if you were in the zone, you wouldn't have thought.
That's fascinating. That's a fascinating way to look at it.
It's like you would have just grabbed your 4-iron. You'd have taken dead aim at it. You wouldn't have even thought about your golf swing, and you'd have hit it to 2 feet and you'd have made that birdie. But that's not what happened. You were thinking. You're like, okay, I'm not going to make the same mistake that I've made in the past. That is what I mean. It's like, great golfers aren't always in the zone.
Mm. That's what important. They are doing. That's an important thing to note here.
Is that they are just like, they're trying to stay immersively present to create the environment that flow can happen. It can happen. It doesn't mean that it will. And golf only has 2 of the 17 flow triggers. So it's not like football that's got 13, or like high speed surfing or mountain biking that's got all 17. The more dangerous things are, the more you're locked in, because your life depends on it. There's nothing really life threatening about golf, other than the environment that you're playing in. And are you playing in a competition that asks you to be slightly better than you are on average? Those are things that amp up your performance. But here's an interesting stat. Proven, choking at anything occurs when you're being asked to perform more than 20% higher than your highest capability in the past. That's when choking occurs, when you're being asked to do something 20% past your capabilities. Because flow state is when you're actually doing something like 8%, 12% past. Like you're out there and you find yourself playing in a pro-am and you get a chance to play with Rory. And he's all of a sudden making you feel really good. And you start and everybody's playing good. He's elevating you. You're now playing way above your pay grade, but not so far past yourself, because you got insurance because you got teammates. But you're just locked in because it's easy and it's free. Man, being able to control what goes on around you and keep the percentage plays in mind and know who you are for real is what I call, that's the separator between elite and good, good and average and poor, is that the elite players know where they are in their mind. They don't get in the way of the zone, but they also know when they're not there, they're playing chess.
And Virgil, you're not saying, right, you're not saying doubt yourself for the listeners. You're saying, I mean, golf is all about risk management, risk assessment, yep. And at least starting at that point. And some shots are considered riskier for you versus other shots. Ev, jump in.
I kept trying to figure out how to ask this in this last 5 minutes while listening. And it's, let me see if I can do it. So what I keep hearing is this dance, as you called it, Virgil, of these great players like Brandt, and we've talked about Jason Day and Jack Nicklaus. Their self-image, their belief is up here, very high. Yet they also accept that they're going to have bad ones, and they take their medicine when they do, and they don't relate and link those little chip, what could be a chip in the armor, to us, it doesn't affect their belief or their ability on the next one or them as a whole. Yet amateurs don't accept that the bad ones are going to come. We expect all of them are going to be like that shot I hit on number two, which was an incredible shot. And yet our self-image is way down here. So I ask, is that because that formula's backwards? Is our self-image low because we keep expecting to hit the miracle shot every time? I'm trying to figure out to help our listeners do that dance where you've got to be able to accept that you're going to have a lot of bad ones, but you can't let that impact your self-image. That's a really hard dance to do.
Yeah, and once again, there's a lot of expectation management and truth within the expectation management, right? So a lot of people don't want to accept the truth. That's number one. The truth being, could you pull it off? Yes. But if we told you on the blackjack table, on this particular flop right here, you have a 2% chance of winning, are you going all in? No. But on the golf course, you're going all in. Why would you do that? Because you know you're not playing in a tournament, and you just want to see if you can do it. But then as soon as it doesn't happen, then you're all pissed. And you're like, it doesn't make any sense. Because right. We play in a world that we haven't decided who we want to be that day or that shot. And we just say, let's see what happens. But then it doesn't pull off, and then you get pissed about it. Well, that's a you problem, not a golf problem or anything else problem. And like that's so normal. But at the end of the day, the best players in the world have that belief because they practice under conditions that are more difficult than the game. Like if they're trying to work on short putting to win a major championship, like Rory, I would imagine, knows that he has generally thrown away the Masters on the putting green more than once. And he knows that there are a lot of dicey four-footers that you play outside the hole. Well, what's he going to do? He's not going to make one. He's going to force himself to make three in a row to say he can win. Because when he sets up over the putt to win, he's going to say, all I have to do is make one of these. I've been practicing having to make three of these. All I have to do is make one. That's easy. They hit drives like, and let's say Rory's a natural drawer of the golf ball, but he has to hit a fade off 18 tee. He's going to go to his golf course wherever he plays at to get prepared. He's not going to hit one fade. He's going to say, I have to hit five in a row before I walk out of here. Because when he steps on that tee box on the 72nd hole with a one-shot lead with Brooks Koepka breathing down his neck, he's going to step up there and say, I only got to do this one time.
Right.
And we don't know what 10 handicap is practicing like that.
All right, the train is slowing down. We're going to make a quick stop. Don't worry. We'll get it right back on track in a second. But first, we have hit springtime. And springtime is arguably the best time of the year. Don't tell that to my allergies. I think this is the best time of year because it's really when golf season starts for most of the world. And also it means the Masters is going to be here very soon. So you know what that means? The Azalea collection is back for Roback Activewear, my favorite collection in apparel. They've got a bunch of new designs. They've got spring polo designs. They've got spring colors. They've got the Azalea print, the polo that got me 10,854 compliments when I went to the Masters a couple years ago. I ran into like 10 other people wearing it, and it was like this secret society. We were pounding fists. It was awesome. So go to roback.com, tap the link in our show notes, or go to our Instagram at the Par Train, and that 15% will auto apply in your cart. If it doesn't work, it means you've used it before. So get creative, do whatever you have to do, create a new email, whatever. Didn't hear it from us. It's springtime. You deserve some new golf get up for the season. Look good, feel good, baby. So tap the link in our show notes or in our bio at the Par Train on Instagram is probably the best place to do it. And tap the Roback link. It'll auto apply in your cart, 15% off.
Happy spring, everybody. Pumped for the Masters. It's going to be here soon. Hope you guys get some new gear. All right, let's get back to the show.
Help our listeners figure out how to practice. Now, we all have less resources than Rory McIlroy, right? We got family, we got kids, we got jobs, we got in LA, all you do is hit off mats. It's crazy to me. They don't have grass out in California. Evan's got to just hit off mats all the time. But and usually we got an hour to an hour and a half to practice, maybe once a week, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
How do you, I always look at practice. So I grew up, I played Division I college, and my coach always looked at us, like, we're going to break this up. We're going to train. We're going to have training portion, and then we're going to have tournament portion. So talk to the 10 handicap, the 8 handicap, the 12 handicap about how they should be practicing with the limited time and resources they have. So when they do get to the course that weekend or whatever they do next, they're in a better spot.
Okay. I'm going to take for granted that this 8 to 12 handicapper has been playing golf for a while. Okay. I'm going to take that for, okay. So I'm going to say that they wouldn't have to hit golf balls to work on their golf swing. Because what we know about myelin, which is this real scientific term for muscle memory, what we know about it is that if you have position changes that you need to put into your golf swing, you would be better off in your house finding those positions and holding them for 10 seconds, 20 times, 3 times a day. So like if it's a backswing position, you're trying to get your left arm flatter and your left wrist flexed. You do it, you take it up there, you put it in position, you hold it for 10 seconds, you do it 20 times before breakfast, before lunch, and before you go to bed. That's better than 99% of your range sessions.
Mm.
Okay. Now I'm going to say it'd be wise for a 10 handicap to give a good idea, like where do you throw away most of your shots? And I would bet that there are three places. It's because 82% of the game is played with three clubs, driver, wedge, and putter. I would spend a lot of time. I'd get loose with my wedges, work on the short pitches, medium pitches, you know, up to full pitching wedge. I'd kind of move through the bag pretty quickly, like maybe 2 8-irons, 3 6-irons, a hybrid or two.
You're saying don't hit 25 7-irons in a row.
No, because if the game, let's just say that the game is designed to have two putts for every hole. It's not really quite real. Let's just call it 30 shots. And you're going to hit 14 drives, that's 44. The 10 handicap's going to hit 5 greens, so he's going to hit 13 chips, and he's probably going to hit another 9 full wedges. So that's 62 shots, and they're going to shoot 80? Well, that's like 77% of the game is with the lob wedge, the putter, and the driver. So that leaves 18 shots if they shoot 80 with the other 11 clubs. So you're averaging like 1.6 shots per club in the bag minus driver, wedge, putter.
So, Ev, what's a full bucket? What's a large bucket? 90 balls?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, like, it's like a pyramid's 90, usually 90 balls in a pyramid.
Yeah.
Right? So I would say, you know, 40 variety wedge shots from 20 to full. 2 9-irons, 3 9-irons. 3 7-irons, pick go odds or evens, 3 3 3 3, get to the driver or 3 wood. A slicer usually hits 3 wood better than the driver. Hookers usually drive the golf ball better than the 3 wood. And then hit it, gets like visualized, like to find 2 poles or 2 flags on the driving range, that's your fairway, and make yourself feel like I got to get 7 out of 10, 10 out of 14, you know, whatever. Then go over to the putting green, and for a 10 handicap, they have to dominate from 3 feet in. If you don't miss a 3-footer, you're going to kill it. A college golfer's 4 feet, tour player's 5 feet. So it's 10, like if they just do take 10 balls and put it around a cup the length of their putter, and they go around 10 times, hit 100 putts, and they can make 90, that's a pretty good day at the office. Mickelson used to make 100 before he – 100 in a row, just go in a circle 10 times. And when he won the Masters, in his first Masters, I was there. I was with Brandt. It was the first time he'd ever completed the drill the first time. He made his first 100, and he didn't know what to do with himself. He's like, well, I give myself a couple hours to do this, and I just did it in like 22 minutes. Wow. Well, he didn't miss anything for the first time in his life that day, right? And then lag putting is to be able to lag it into the 6 foot blanket. 3 feet on any side of the hole is a 6 foot blanket. Do you think you could hit a 30 foot putt into a 6 foot hole? Yeah, we'll do that. You already know you're going to make your 3 footer. Now you're not wasting strokes on the putting green. You've worked on your chipping and pitching, and you're driving the golf ball effectively. How much better could you really do in an hour and 20 minutes? Not much.
Yeah. I love that. That's a whole plan right there.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
So let me ask you this, Virgil. Dive into the mirror work a little bit more for a second. Do you think that, and this is someone that's working on a swing right now, mm-hmm. right? Do you think that getting to your position or whatever you're trying to work on and hold it for 10 seconds and doing that 20 times, is that more effective than beating balls because you're not going to be distracted and dejected from the result? Because I know from personal experience, it's very difficult to work on things and see very poor results because the average player is wondering, is this helping me? How is this helping me? I have no feedback that this is actually helping me. Is that why the mirror is better?
Understanding how the brain myelinates motion. Not many people understand that, right? So then that requires a level of trust between you and the coach. So the answer is, I know, irrefutably, scientifically proven, that if you know that you've pivoted and you got your club in the position you're trying to get into and you hold it, your brain is saying, he really wants me to know this position. Why does he want me to know it so much? Well, I guess I'll just learn it. And it fingerprints it, it stamps it over and over and over and over again until it becomes second nature. The reason why it's hard to hit balls with a swing change is that most people, one, aren't videotaping every swing to see if they've actually done it. They just tried really hard to do it, so they assume that they did when largely they didn't. And then they think, I just did what coach asked me to do and I hit that one like shit. So now what's wrong? And it's not something new. It's the fact that you didn't do what you were trying like heck to do. And that is what I call job security. The job security that I have is that you know what I'm asking you to do. You are so passionate about doing it and you're diligently trying your best and you literally can't believe that the only thing you were trying to do is get your left wrist flat at the top and you swore on your life that you did it and that you didn't do it. And it's heartbreaking. That's why I'm doing it in slow motion and holding it. The brain imprints it. It's like, that's my new destination. That's my new destination. And all of a sudden, you know it. You have, it's there every time. Man, it's so crazy. Like, you just have to trust that if somebody who's a really good golf coach, and there are many of them out there, that understand how the cerebellum stores muscle memory. You could really cut how much you practice, like beat ball practice, to get way better because that's how muscle memory, myelin, works.
Well, you've had the breakthrough with slow motion swings recently.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the first time ever I've been able to hit a decent shot in slow motion. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm someone that rolls it way inside, drops it in, it's stuck, and I either block it or I have to flip it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what's really funny, I'm glad you brought that up, Serm, because this is something that I thought was really fascinating in my last lesson. Josh, my coach, Josh Alpert, he said, you know, the thing to keep in mind is he might tell me, just let it drop and turn. And I might be trying to do it. It might make total sense that yes, I fixed my grip. We've got it in a better position. The face is more square. So I have now, I've given permission to just drop it and turn. But my body inherently and intuitively says, hell no, you're insane. Because for someone that rolls it way open, tilts and has to flip it, not manipulating the face and swinging really hard to close it down is total death
way right.
Terrifying.
And my body has not been given, to your point about Phil and all those putts and all of those moments. Maybe that's really the answer to the question that I asked, is you kind of have to, on one hand, at the beginning of the show, we talked about acting as if and that high belief. But you, it's really hard to get there without the work to support the belief. So, right? You have to put in the work to then say, I've done it. I can do this.
I mean, it's hurt.
If you, you can't fake confidence.
Right.
You either earn it or you don't.
Yeah.
And that's where, in the black box up here, when you set up over a shot, you can talk about how confident you're going to be, but deep down inside, your brain's like, whatever, dude. There's no way this is happening.
Right.
And that's a coach's job. The coach's job is to train you how to train so that you have true confidence, so that under the maximum amount of pressure that you can put yourself under, whether that's a PGA tournament, the member guest, or four of your buddies teeing it up every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., the pressure that you feel asking yourself to perform at the highest level is no different than what Tiger felt.
Yeah.
It's on a different level, but measured inside the heart rate, the breathing rate, and what's going on inside the brain, it's identical. And helping people understand that it's all the same, it makes it human, and you have to give them a process and a system to follow, and then it's their discipline to follow it that dictates how good they get. Exclamation point.
Hmm. I can't believe we're already at an hour. That was really fun. That was great, Virgil. we'll have to bring you back and dive into other concepts more deeply, but
Practice stuff today. There's a lot of great stuff, Virgil, but I really think this is going to be so good for our listeners about how to practice. And you've studied this and done this your whole career. So kudos to you for really simplifying that concept.
I'm very aware that there are many great golf coaches out there. And I just have a passion to help people understand how to truly learn. Because there's a massive bridge between what people think it takes and what it really takes. And my job is to kind of hold their hand or navigate them across the waters to the other side. And some people need more hand holding than others because of the fear of letting somebody else down.
Mm.
The fear of letting themselves down, or somebody that's paying for them to do it, or the encourager of the dream. There's a huge gap between I hope I can do it and I know I can do it.
Mm.
There are more than just me. I am absolutely guaranteed there's hundreds of people that know. But to be around somebody that truly knows how to get you from hope to believe to know is what it takes to be great at anything. And I'm just fortunate for all the people that have helped me get there. Obviously, I've done a lot of work myself, but it was through the encouragement of others to chase knowledge, true knowledge, and true facts to what it takes to be great. And I mean, this kind of show is so down my alley, as you can probably feel, like you're in my wheelhouse. And there's literally days of content stored inside this noggin, because you have to ask me a question for me to find the file that matches what you want. Because if not, I'm just going to blabber for hours and you're not going to know how to put it all together, because it's like a 20,000 puzzle piece box I dump out on the table. But if you said, hey, can you find me the red part of the roof? Boop, there it is. And that's really what it comes down to. And I just have to ask people this. If you're really interested in playing great golf, find the best players in your area and ask them who they work with. They don't generally lie. If the best players have found the best coaches, and it's hilarious, you go to a town, go to a city, and you see all these great players, and if there's 50 great players, 36 are seeing one guy, 10 are seeing another guy, and 4 are seeing another guy, and everybody else, there's a reason why they're not being seen. Go find those guys. And then you have to find the cost effectiveness for you, because the better somebody is, the more they charge. But at the end of the day, my history is seeing I make things happen in 1 hour faster than some in 10. And it's all about finding somebody that can resonate with your brain and your talent level to get you to believe in yourself, to work on a process or a system to be as great as you can be, because the results are proven how it works. And you find somebody that can do that for you, that's how you achieve your dreams.
Yeah. And we'll ask you this final thing, Virgil, and you might've just said it. So if you just said it, let me know, but is there anything we said today that you really want to leave someone with and hammer home? Or is there anything we didn't cover that you think's worth mentioning before we go? And then we got to tell people where to find you.
I believe that expectation management, true expectation management, is the largest chasm for amateur golf, because they spend a lot of time thinking about that one shot, that great shot, that awesome shot, as if it's going to be an everyday occurrence. If you understand how far your ball flies truly in the air and you have a general idea what direction it's going to curve, you can mathematically disassemble a golf course to the best of your ability. Anything that you do to get better only means you're learning how to straighten the curve and hit it longer. That requires then proper effort and work in a system with a coach. But most people don't know how far they hit it. So they always pick the wrong club, and they don't want to trust that their natural ball flight, which almost always shows up, will show up. They hit and hope instead of play to what they know. And the fear of underperforming in front of peers is a damaging animal that people have to learn how to navigate, because almost all of the fears that we have are grossly overimagined. You just have to spend a lot of time in the world of what you know.
It's a good quote.
And then increase your knowledge to lower your handicap.
Love it.
Love it. Well, if you guys like this episode, Virgil, you got your own show called On the Verge. So definitely check that out. And just Google Virgil Herring, H-E-R-R-I-N-G, and you guys will probably be able to find all of the great stuff that Virgil does. So thank you,
guys,
Virgil.
Thank you very much for having me on, man. This is like, I could do this all the time. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity and the platform. Yeah. I love your podcast. Great job.
Let's do it again. Great to meet you.
Thanks, Virgil. Take care. Thanks for hopping aboard, guys. Before you hop off the train, I think I got something you're going to love. Our new YouTube channel is growing fast. It's something I'm putting a lot of focus and time and my heart into. So if you guys like the podcast, our YouTube is going to come out with the video podcast of the audio version every Monday on our YouTube channel, as well as more and more videos to help you enjoy the ride and keep your game on track. So go to youtube.com/@thepartrain or just search The Par Train on the YouTubes, and hopefully we can keep riding this train together. Thanks again for hopping aboard. Hope you guys enjoyed the ride.